Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, construction is underway on Detroit's arts alleys. We'll find out what this is all about from Rochelle Riley, the Director of Arts and Culture with the City of Detroit's Office of Arts, Culture, and Entrepreneurship. The NFL Draft, the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, and the Rocket Mortgage Classic are over. But downtown Detroit continues to welcome lots of visitors this summer. We'll check in with Eric Larson, the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership, to learn more about the great events coming to town for the rest of the year. And the Detroit Jazz Fest organizers are hard at work preparing for this fantastic Labor Day event in the city. Chris Collins, president and artistic director of the Detroit Jazz Festival Foundation, will join us to talk about this year's impressive lineup of musicians. A great show about what's happening in and around the D, coming up right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas. The city of Detroit has a great art scene, and construction is underway on arts alleys across the city. So I thought this would be a good time to check in with Rochelle Riley. She's the Director of Arts and Culture for the City of Detroit. Rochelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ann. Good to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, too. So tell us about these arts alleys. What are they?
Well, I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with the Z Arts Alley downtown, where there's this beautiful paved space, and you can walk out of the backs of restaurants and businesses into this space, which is like a community center, party center, entertainment space. Well, I decided that we should do that, but in neighborhoods. So in 9 neighborhoods around the city, we're creating these amazing gathering spaces, and they're, you know, designed to focus on elevating, you know, neighborhood identity and creating connections for neighbors. And it's a place where you can gather, whether you want to do it for a picnic or a concert, with a focus on art, because there will be art installations in all 9 of them. So, and there's also the practical thing. It's going to mitigate flooding because we're redoing them. That means they're digging up the old alley and putting down a new one.
So will these different alleys reflect the neighborhood, Rochelle?
Absolutely. We did months of community engagement with the neighbors whose properties border the alley and who live in the neighborhood who will be using it. And everything was designed based on, number one, how they wanted to use the alley, number two, what they wanted it to look like, and number three, what type of connection they were making. For instance, one of the alleys in Northwest Detroit, they're an environmental neighborhood association. They're redoing 18 alleys, so we're just doing one of their alleys. But they did not want concrete. They wanted grass. They have rain barrels. They have all types of environmental accoutrements. And so that's their alley, and that's what we're doing for them. The other ones all have different vibes, different themes, and different ways of connecting with each other.
Can you tell us about some of the artists who are involved in this incredible project? It's really interesting.
Well, the artists haven't started yet. This is all construction.
Okay.
But we have, thanks to some wonderful philanthropic partners, arts fellows. And those fellows, who are all artists, are going to be working with the stakeholders, and that's those property owners who are doing these spaces, to find the artists that they want to have their work in the alley. Some of it will be mural. Some of it might be other types of art installations. But they will help them work on that, and we're going to watch it happen, because this is about helping people who are already doing this. When someone asked, how did you pick the alleys? We didn't pick the alleys. The alleys picked us.
Mm.
These are folks who have already started doing things. Over in Jefferson Chalmers in southeast Detroit, there's a woman and her neighbors who have purchased different lots that they have turned into these amazing spaces off the alley. You know, they have a wheelchair garden. They have a butterfly garden. They have 3 solar stations, and they have a big gathering space. They turn one of the lots into a little park where they have festivals. So all of that is happening off that alley. So what we're going to do is make the alley match what they're already doing.
Talk to us about the funding. How did you get the money to do this? Because it's probably pretty expensive, right?
It is a $5.4 million project. And as a part of the American Rescue Plan Act funding, there was a pocket called Neighborhood Beautification Arts Alleys. So this is something that people have envisioned and thought about. I'm glad that Detroit will be on the forefront of trying it. So it's all being paid for with federal funding.
So you mentioned Jefferson Chalmers. What are some of the other neighborhoods that are going to see these really cool alleys?
Well, there's one, the one that we that I mentioned a second ago, that where they're just so environmentally sound. It's called the Snowden-Hartwell Alley. That's off Outer Drive in Northwest Detroit. There's the Bagley Alley, which is right next to the Roberto Clemente Recreation Center across from Mexican Village, and it serves a whole diverse community, you know, neighborhood groups, the Matrix Theater, Southwest Detroit artists. There's a great cultural vibe there because of various cultural groups that live there. We have the Old Redford Alley, which the Artist Village has been using for entertainment for 30 years. So we're actually going to be able to take that alley and upgrade it so that they can continue to do what they're doing. And then we have several alleys. The contract will be going to the city council for four more. We started with five. The project got popular. We got more funding. And we're going to be doing the city's first Agra Arts Alley, where we're working with the Oakland Avenue Urban Farm and artists in the North End to create an alley that's based on that farm and growth area that they have over there. And again, there are spaces off the alley where they've done amazing things. There's going to be a rose garden. There's a place where they hold weddings. There's a stage. All of that will be upgraded so that everybody who's doing something, they'll be able to do it in an even better way.
You know, this is also a safety issue. This is going to make these alleys a lot cleaner and safer and better for these communities.
It's going to literally transform these areas into more public park space, if you will, where all of a sudden you're not walking down this dank, you know, alley with sinkholes and it's a little scary. It's going to be totally clean, totally just safe structurally to walk on. I mean, you walk on some of the alleys now, you can step in a pothole.
Right.
Totally safe. Yeah. And it's going to be transformative.
Absolutely. I can see these alleys getting on City Institute's tours with Jeanette Pierce because they sound like they're going to be so cool once they're done.
Well, I didn't even mention that you're absolutely right. These are tourist destinations.
Yes.
Once these are set, people can walk through them. People can come to events in them, which happen now, but they'll happen even more so now and in a more exciting way.
You know, you've got a great job, Rochelle Riley, as the Director of Arts and Culture for the City of Detroit. Can you talk about the incredible arts scene that we do have here in Detroit?
Well, I can tell you, when the mayor asked me to do this job 5 years ago, there was no arts and culture office or department or anything at city government, which I thought was heinous. So when he asked me to do it, I knew that I would be starting from scratch.
Right.
So the first thing that I had to do was a listening tour around the city to see what people wanted. And it was clear they wanted more financial support and they wanted more spaces to do things. So we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary. And I'll have to send you over a copy of our 5-year report. We call it the Quint Report. And it details everything that we were able to achieve over more than 100 in projects and partnerships and things called Creativity Takes Courage. And we literally started, as you know, with the pandemic. We had this huge opening where I remember it was at Chroma, when Chroma was not even a building yet. They were in the middle of constructing it. And 150 artists and all the press showed up February of 2020, said, "We are ready. We're going to get started." And of course, within 2 weeks, we were in with the pandemic. And our first big project was the memorial at Belle Isle. But then, you know, we slowly came back from that and started to do all kinds of things, thanks to partners like the Kresge Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Huntington Bank, Hudson Weber Foundation. We did the Detroit ACE Honors, where we honored, you know, creatives who have given 25 years or more of service to the city. We honored Broadway stars, including our Tony Award winner, Celia Keenan-Bolger, who at that time was starring in To Kill a Mockingbird. We did a whole big celebration at Spirit Plaza. We, quite frankly, did what we had to do for artists. We launched a telethon with Big Sean and Jeff Daniels and a bunch of people just to raise money for artists who had lost their stages and lost their ability to make, you know, money. And we gave out $500 grants until they went away. And then we did the city's first street mural, the Power to the People mural, downtown on Lowell Woodward, which we just repainted so that, you know, we can do that every year. We did a lot of things for youth, several things. We hosted a concert for the Detroit Youth Choir after their fame-inducing performance on America's Got Talent. And the Broadway star LaShanz, who was amazing, Tony Award winner herself, and she was the original Celia in The Color Purple, she came to Detroit and sang with them on stage at Orchestra Hall, which is home to our most beloved Detroit Symphony Orchestra. And for a lot of those kids, it was the first time they'd been at Orchestra Hall on a stage that they deserved to be on. So I could go on and on, but the bottom line is we have done everything we can to make sure people know that our artists are a creative workforce. Artists are small businesses. If you're a dancer, you're a small business. If you're an actress, you're a small business. If you're a stagehand, you're a small business. We need to give them the same financial support we do for restaurants and developers of affordable housing and anything else.
Well, and it sounds like, Rochelle, that with the city's resurgence, art is booming too throughout the city of Detroit.
It's amazing. None more so than our murals. We did the nation's first street art summit because Detroit is now on the top 10 list. We're number 5. So we had 7 representatives from 7 of the top 10 cities to come to Detroit to have a conversation about mural arts. And we launched the Detroit mural map, and several people in cities have mural maps, but ours was the fastest growing in the country. And we now have 700 murals on it, and we're going to document every mural and the artists who did it. And you can go to that site wherever you are in the city. You can, if you see a mural, you can look it up and see who did it, when they did it, why they did it. And that keeps people from calling me saying, well, I'm at the corner of Mac and Bewick. I like this mural. Who did it? I'm like, I don't know.
You know, it's so cool how the train station kept some of that graffiti. When you walk in, you see that. It's really, really interesting how they did that, kind of as, you know, to honor some of these really talented artists.
I want people to understand that street art is art and graffiti is art, and not all graffiti is something that's bad. Now, the mayor has a crackdown on graffiti. He doesn't want anything that's offensive or anything that shouldn't be where it is.
Right.
But I love that they paid homage to a whole group of people. Murals are not new. Artists have been doing murals in Detroit for decades. But what we want to do is encourage a young generation, these new and emerging artists, to keep doing that. So we're working on that. I think anything and everything that keeps our kids here, that's what we want to do. I don't want any kid who wants to have a career in the creative arts to feel like they have to go to New York or Seattle or Austin or even Cleveland, for God's sakes, because they can't do what they want to do in Detroit. I have friends in Cleveland. They hate when I say that. And they have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I'm still mad about. So I just want people to know that this is, you know, we are the Motor City, Music City, Mural City, Make It Happen City. And anything that can happen anywhere, we can do it. And in Detroit, sometimes we do it better. So we want to show people, yes, great things are happening here.
And you've also got all that work going on at the Motown Museum. Speaking of artists, that's incredible what's happening over there.
That expansion is going to be amazing. And people still come from around the globe. It's not just a national tourist site, but around the globe, because I don't know that people still really remember when Berry Gordy did that. I mean, you're talking a time when segregation was still a thing, where black and white kids danced on separate sides of the room, and he created the sound of young America. And all of a sudden, there were no walls, there were no barriers. It brought people together in a way that you would not believe. And I promise you, I can go stand right downtown at the corner of Woodward and Congress and start singing a Motown song, and there will be people who come up and sing with me. They know all the lyrics, all the lyrics.
You're absolutely right. Rochelle Riley, Director of Arts and Culture for the City of Detroit, thank you so much for the time today. And we cannot wait to go on a tour with you of these really cool arts alleys. This is going to be so great for the city.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to host you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, some big events are over for the year, but Detroit continues to welcome visitors from all over the world. We'll check in with the CEO of the Downtown Detroit Partnership to see what's happening in Motown right after these messages. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Some big events are over for the year, but Detroit continues to welcome visitors from all over the world. Eric Larson, Chief Executive Officer for the Downtown Detroit Partnership, thanks for checking in today.
Ann Thomas, it is always a pleasure and an honor to be with you. Thanks for taking the time.
You're so nice. So first of all, Eric, I want to talk a little bit about a perception survey that you have out that we can all participate in. Talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, I think it's really important because for us, in order for us to be smart about the way we're not only, you know, finding success, but also just deploying our resources and adjusting to the changing environment. Every 2 years, we conduct a a perception survey. It's something that we have partnered in the past with MSU, and it gives us an insight into, you know, one, what people are feeling and how they think the work that we're doing to make Detroit and downtown Detroit, and more particular, really a truly welcoming and clean and safe environment. And so every 2 years we do this. It is live now. So if you go to downtowndetroit.org, the first thing you'll see is a pop-up link to take the survey. It's very quick. It takes just a couple minutes. And it is invaluable information for us. But you know, some of the things that we really track is we track not just what is the perception of Detroit, which, I'm pleased to say, over 88% of the people, the respondents, feel that not only Detroit is welcoming and safe and a great inviting place, but also is improving, and that's actually up from 83% in 2022. So lots of things that help us sort of understand what is ultimately important, what people want. We do a lot of conversations and sort of data tracking on the level of visitors, but this is a guide that really gets to the heart of how do people feel, what are what's the environment like, what are some of the activities that are most desirable, and then ultimately what are some of the improvements that we need to be doing, especially in our public spaces, to adjust to the changing times, the way people are working and visiting the city of Detroit.
I know what I like when I visit a city, but based on some of the past results, what do people really care about when they come into a city center, Eric Larson?
First and foremost, Ann, and this is not, particular to Detroit, people want to feel safe.
Right.
They want to know that they're in a place that, not only feels vibrant and welcoming, but that they really do have this sense of safety. And one of the ways that we do that is obviously through our ambassador program. We have ambassadors out 24/7, and those ambassadors are as much a part of the overall clean as they are the welcoming component. They're constantly doing intercepts with individuals, helping them find directions, making sure that if they have an issue, that there's a place that they can go to either resolve that issue or they have a safe space that they can actually find comfort. And so those are things that are really important to us. We also have deployed mental health professionals as part of that team, so that as people do face challenges in their lives, and unfortunately, there is that aspect of our community, but it's an important part of that community that we need to reach out and touch and ultimately assist. And so we help not only define and find those individuals, but we help them get to some of the wraparound services. And then last, a lot of what we do, as is the investment in our public spaces. It's the capital investments to continue to evolve them. So, for instance, we've produced a lot of investment around connectivity. So every park has free Wi-Fi. And so as people work more remotely and they come to our public spaces to not just hang out, but actually try and do some work, they have the connectivity that they need. And then there are things like, for instance, our deployment of recycling and hygiene stations. All of that is a part of the strategy to not only create a very inviting environment, but one that services everyone's needs.
And, the reaction that you got from all of the big events that you've already had, NFL Draft, Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, Rocket Mortgage Classic, people really are appreciating what you have done for them so far this year.
Yeah, and it's amazing. We talked about this before. The amount of excitement that we are seeing in Detroit from people, not just in our city and our region and our state, but outside of the state. The NFL Draft is a great example. Not only did we have record-breaking crowds at 775,000 people, but we had every state represented in the city of Detroit. So these are people that probably many of which had not come. Our numbers suggest that over 200,000 people came from out of the state of Michigan. These are people that, ultimately perceptions are being changed. And so as we think about this perception survey, it's interesting, 65% of the people that decide to relocate to a certain place first visit it.
Mm.
So if we had over 200,000 people that visited for the first time and we capture 65%, I'm not saying we will, that, you know, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty important group of individuals to be engaging with. And then the other thing that, you know, we found is that, you know, people want to, you know, come back. And so, for instance, with the Detroit Grand Prix, which is an annual event, that not only has an annual economic impact, but we saw a 20% increase in the attendance this year. So these events, not just the big one-time events like the NFL draft, but these reoccurring events are gaining additional momentum and continuing to build on not only the excitement, but also the participation. We had hotels that recognized over $6 million of additional revenue during the draft. That, again, was amplified during the Grand Prix. You know, we had, you know, over 30,000 people that visited bars and restaurants just over the 3 days of the draft. So those are things that ultimately really help our brick and mortar businesses. It helps continue to pump additional dollars into the economy. And for every dollar that's spent here locally, 70% of it stays in the community. Whereas if you buy from Amazon or some other place, nothing against Amazon, it's the reverse. Only about 30 cents of that stays in the local economy. Sure. So these are really important activities that we're driving.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about ambassadors. I noticed that at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. You know, you walked right up to the course and people were saying, you know, welcome to the Rocket Mortgage Classic. It's great that you're here. And it does make you feel really good that somebody is noticing you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Rocket Mortgage Classic has done an amazing job of, you know, not only being a great ambassador of the event, but an ambassador of the city. And I think that's been, you know, that Midwest hospitality and yes. The, you know, that we love and quite frankly often promote is a big part of these events. So at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, the other thing that they're really fun about is they're making sure that we're connecting the downtown with other parts of the community. We did the same thing with the NFL draft, where every neighborhood throughout the city was engaged in some way, even though the event was taking place downtown. Rocket Mortgage put up some really fun Adirondack chairs in our beach, just to, again, to signify the connection between these different events and the neighborhoods within our city that are so unique.
Yes. Eric Larson, Chief Executive Officer for the Downtown Detroit Partnership. What are some of the other big events that are on the horizon for you?
Well, we obviously, from a Downtown Detroit Partnership standpoint, are so excited for the annual tree lighting that comes up here in November.
Yes, that's right.
It's a little bit off. I want to, you know, enjoy the pure Michigan summer. But we are really excited about that. Every year it gets bigger and better. Not only does the talent continue to get better, but the overall attendance continues to break records every year, and we're excited about that. We have a party in the park that is an important sort of fundraiser for our parks that also kicks off here in the middle of August, August 15th. And then, you know, again, we have a whole host of related activities like the Jazz Festival, obviously like the Thanksgiving Day Parade. All of those things create a level of consistent activity in the downtown that not only is really important for our economy, but gives something for everyone to do. And then, you know, and the fun stuff is every night we have something going on in our public spaces. You know, Campus Martius, the number one public square 3 years in a row in the United States, you know, has a movie night tonight. We do that throughout the summer. Capitol Park has yoga on Tuesday nights. So there's always something for everyone to do, even if it's just sort of a more small scale, intimate setting.
You know, you mentioned the Detroit Jazz Fest. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Chris Collins. But I got to tell you, I love the Jazz Fest because I just think it's so cool how there's music all over downtown Detroit.
Yeah, and you know, the stage makeup of the Jazz Fest is really unique because it does spread that music and spread that activity and entertainment throughout the downtown. I think that, you know, as Detroit continues to evolve, you know, the important thing is each one of these activities has a little bit different attraction. We have recognized that Detroiters, people that are living within the city, are utilizing the downtown more and more. They're feeling much more ownership. They're feeling much more comfortable and the events that we're producing, you know, have really responded to the very diverse, you know, groups of individuals that live in our city. But it also is a regional asset. And so as we think about how we're activating things like the waterfront, how we're activating, you know, the parks in the middle of the city, Joe Louis Greenway, all of those things are creating linkages and allowing us to have different types of entertainment and different types of activities that ultimately, you know, really touch everyone. It doesn't matter whether you're 8 or 80, there is something for you to do. And I think that in itself is an incredibly equitable and important aspect of our overall sustainability of our community.
And, you know, you, Eric Larson, have been such a big part of Detroit's resurgence. Do you personally have one thing that's kind of in the back of your mind that you're going to work on for the new year for the city of Detroit?
Well, I think, Anne, and this is something that we'll, you know, I hope you and I have a chance to talk about, but, you know, we have a number of really exciting opportunities. The level of investment that is taking place between, you know, the Pistons and Henry Ford Health at the north end of our downtown, and then obviously the U of M Innovation Center, and then what's happening with MSU and Dan Gilbert. All of those things are critical. You then go to the west with Michigan Central. So for me, it really, as we move into 2025, it's about how do we continue to leverage this activity? How do we continue to collaborate and make sure that we're breaking down silos and really opening up pathways for a much more resilient future for the city of Detroit? And I could not be more excited. I mean, the events are a huge part of that. My favorite event, I hate to say it because I love the tree lighting, but is the Grand Prix. I just love the
it's
racing.
So cool.
I should have been a race car driver. you know, the events are great, but ultimately the ability to create this 24/7, this really evolving community and economic activity is what I'm most focused on as we move into 2025. We've got some amazing public sector leadership that I think is going to continue to be, you know, front and center in making sure that we're thinking about the things that we need to support. But most importantly, we have a foundation and a corporate community that always steps up and, you know, making sure that we're responding to their needs, making sure that we're responding to the individual needs. That's what gets me excited. That's why I love this job and the people that I get to work with.
Eric Larson, Chief Executive Officer for the Downtown Detroit Partnership. Thank you for checking in today. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you, Ann.
And coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we are going to talk a lot more about the Detroit Jazz Fest right after these messages. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage, and I'm Ann Thomas. The Detroit Jazz Festival is the world's largest and best, I might add, free jazz festival. And Chris Collins, the president and artistic director for the Detroit Jazz Festival Foundation, is on the other end of the line. Chris, I bet you are already very busy getting ready for this great event.
Well, thank you, Ann. Thanks for having me on the wonderful program, Opportunity Detroit. Yeah, well, you know, it's much like the other large events in town, the parade company stuff, the Grand Prix, you know, pretty much within a couple of weeks after each festival, we are, you know, preparing everything for the following year, and that continues all year along with our year-round activation. So it's an ongoing thing, but it's a great joy for everyone involved.
So, Chris, tell us about some of the artists that are scheduled to come to the Motor City this year.
Sure. You know, every year we work quite hard to not only highlight those very important artists and important projects and new commissions and premieres that are throughout the jazz community around the world, but also remaining true to our mission and the importance of the Detroit jazz legacy scene, which is deep, and as I often say, few cities can brag the symbiotic relationship between their culture and jazz music, and certainly Detroit is at the top of that list, as anyone will tell you. So there's a wonderful mix of artistry, all from the jazz tree, though. We are one of the true jazz festivals, and as you commented, a premier jazz festival in the world, but on top of it, we remain free after 45 years. I think the last standing one, and it's quite a special thing because it allows everyone access to these artists. Now, you know, one of the lead pieces is, of course, our artist in residence, the great drummer Brian Blade, who was doing three performances that are all of different textures, ones with string octet, another one's with the Detroit Jazz Fest Big Band, another one is his incredible Fellowship Band that everybody's familiar with. Those are always going to be special. And additionally, there's some very unique programming, including a world premiere at this year's Detroit Jazz Festival, which is called The Year of Alice, and it celebrates our Detroit-born sister, the great Alice Coltrane, wife of John Coltrane, an incredible pianist and harpist and visionary artist. And that's with a full orchestra, Ravi Coltrane on saxophone, John's son, along with Brandy Younger on harp, and our own Detroit Jazz Fest Orchestra, as well as the rest of the band. That's going to be opening the festival. It's a world premiere, and there's a bunch of surprises to come associated with that. Additionally, something I think everyone's going to love, Kyle Eastwood is the son of the great Clint Eastwood, the actor. He has a very special piece with a full symphony orchestra, the Detroit Jazz Fest Symphony Orchestra, his quintet, and there are these media elements that he's speaking with his father about the music that was so intrinsic to his dad's film work and the great composers. And then they recreate these beautiful versions of the movie soundtracks with jazz elements woven through it and these wonderful conversations between Clint and his son, Kyle. Those kind of things are really going to be attractive to everyone. But most importantly, after June 1st, we announced the incredible Detroit Artistry. We call these our hometown artists because certainly they are many world-class artists that just have chosen to live in Detroit and grow up here. And they range from all generations, all different genres. And what I'm always looking for are those artists that have formed into an ensemble that has its own character as well as the strengths of the individual artistry. And also those artists that are at a very important pinnacle in their artistic career. Maybe they have a brand new record, they've reached a new point in their creative artistry, or they're from the great collection of legendary artists, people like, you know, our legends. Wendell Harrison's with us this year, Leonard King, Walter White and his big band and all his original works. It's incredible stuff. The great Sean Dobbins, Ron English is with us. And then we have some artists that are, you know, in the middle of their career. Anthony Stanko's incredible quintet in his new record. Benjamin Green and the Harmelotics, which is a really interesting creative voice band. Joe DiGregorio, who's a wonderful piano trio, really powerful from Michigan here. And then some of the cats that have that are younger generations that are bringing a new vision to what jazz is, what the language is involving. And we have the great Kassan Belgrave, who's the son of Marcus Belgrave, and Mark Rosenblatt and his band Hockey. These are representative of a whole new texture. And then lastly, our incredible orchestral and jazz artists from throughout the city who we use to formulate the different versions of the Detroit Jazz Festival Orchestra, Symphony Orchestra, and Big Band. So it's a full coverage of everybody and a very diverse mix of generations and styles. And, of course, always celebrating our great legends.
Wow, Chris Collins, this sounds bigger and better than ever before. Wow, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah, really, really special because, you know, our community is so engaged and, you know, they absorb jazz. Most households throughout Detroit, they play jazz. The gospel, church, and the blues and R&B elements of Detroit, along with electronica and some of the new forms that have grown up and actually been born in Detroit, these are part of everyday lifestyle in Detroit. And like the other side of that coin is that so many of the legendary artists in the past and currently have come from Detroit. These are people who have shaped the Detroit language. And that's important because it's not just a jazz festival in the city. It's a Detroit jazz festival. It represents something around the world, people will tell you, is a very unique connection between a culture and this great music. And I think that is the key to why the Detroit Jazz Festival is special. And it is the reason we worked so hard to produce a festival that, I'll be honest with you, it's about a $4.5 to $5 million lift every year.
Wow.
So the donors and sponsors, our angel of jazz, Gretchen Vallée, God rest her soul, but her endowment continues to make a yearly contribution. I mean, it's the only way it can work. It's not easy, but it does produce an opportunity for everyone to feel invited, everyone to bring their families, experience this incredible music on multiple stages from, you know, noon until late in the evening hours with our jam sessions and special events over 4 days of the Labor Day weekend from Friday to Monday, along with, you know, artist interviews. And I have to tell you, if you're a jazz fan, you are sure to see some of your heroes, not just on stage, but hanging out at the festival because they think it's pretty cool, too.
And you mentioned the various stages. Describe for our listeners what exactly this looks like throughout the city of Detroit, Chris Collins, because it's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a long-term evolution, but the footprint begins near the River in Hart Plaza with multiple stages with different designs for different purposes. It's not just the size of the stage, but some are more intimate, some are more open, some are really large, like the Carhartt Amphitheater stage or the J.P. Morgan Chase main stage, which is then located up at Campus Marsh's Cadillac Square area. We close off Woodward. There's incredible food and drink and bars and ways, you know, all the wonderful things you'd expect at a Detroit festival. But it runs that whole gamut. And then this year, we are adding something very special. And it is on the 29th, the day before the festival, there will be the grand opening of a much-awaited venue. It's the Gretchen Sebelay Jazz Center on Cassatt Hancock as part of the Wayne State University campus. It is an entirely renovated structure that has the Detroit Jazz Hall, which seats up to 340 people, specifically, acoustically, and in every other respect, designed for jazz music. We're going to have some limited but very special programming after hours taking place there. And the downstairs venue at the Gretchen Sebelay Jazz Center, which is called Dee Dee Bridgewater's, and Dee is going to be around with us. This is a very hip Detroit or New York downstairs jazz club, about 100 and some seats with some two tops and beautiful concert seating with a stage that belts out right into the audience. And keep in mind, being specifically designed for jazz, there's nothing quite like it because it's between the jazz club kind of thing with 50, 60 capacity and the jazz festival, which is hundreds of thousands of people and huge sound systems. And if artists want to do something really unique and special, they end up having to do it in a hall that's designed for classical music. They have, you know, 1,500, 2,000 seats. So Gretchen's vision, when she approached me about this, was let's find a way to do something that's in the middle that gives artists that special place to perform, that's created to represent the highest level of this form and its cultural influence, and be designed specifically for this music. Really, there's very few things like it anywhere in the world, and we're going to be opening it this year and having some festival performances throughout the weekend that people can hear more about in the near future.
What a great tribute to Gretchen Sebelay, the woman who basically saved this jazz festival years and years ago, Chris.
She's like a jazz musician. She wants it to stay jazz. She wants it to stay free so nobody has to pay. And she wants all the year-round stuff, the youth education program. She wants to see all that be freely available. So, you know, now that she's left us, we always say our angel of jazz got her wings.
Chris Collins, president and artistic director of the Detroit Jazz Festival Foundation, thank you so much for your time today, and keep up the wonderful work.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit, and enjoy the rest of your day.